Welcome back to Season 3 of Smells in the House. This podcast is presented by Adventures in Americana, a platform created to promote and support artists and live music venues. Our primary focus is Midwest and indie or emerging Americana artists. In this series, our host, music journalist and photographer Tom Smells, visits artists to discuss songwriting, listen to a few of their tunes, and find out about the places they live, work, and create.
Welcome to another Smells in the House presented by Adventures in Americana. This is the podcast where we're the guest. My name is Tom Smells, and today I'm inside the second adopted home of Austin, Minnesota-born folk and blues artist Charlie Parr here at the Turf Club here in St. Paul. Charlie is back here once again for another January residency at the venue, and we're lucky enough to catch up with him today. Charlie, thanks for having us in. We're sitting in the green room today.
We are, and thanks for having me. I appreciate being on today.
The only thing green in here is the actual cactuses.
Yes, but they're nice. So it's a fine green room. It's a good one.
Yeah. Well, as someone that, you know, travels and you play all over the place, is songwriting for you, are you constantly doing that? Is that something that you primarily do when you're at home back in Duluth? I mean, kind of talk me through that process of how you squeeze that in.
It happens regularly. It happens when it happens. And I don't feel like I'm very good at controlling that. When ideas come up, it feels kind of aggressive. Like assertive is probably a better word for it. Like there's a thing there, you know, I either can take the time and sit down and work it out, or I can ignore it and it'll probably go away forever. And so usually what I do if I'm on the road, you know, I try to be safe about it. If I happen to be driving, I'll pull over in a rest area and just sit and make notes. You know, I've got a little, the voice memo on my phone is filled with little fragments and snippets of melody ideas and musical ideas, even lyric ideas, if I can't find a piece of paper. But it happens whenever it happens, and I'm grateful for that. I've never tried to alter that process. I've always just kind of went with it. You know, I've never really consciously sat down and said, today I'm going to write a song and it's going to be like this. I've always just kind of waited because something will show up or it won't. It's not a big deal.
Yeah.
You know.
Have you gone through writer's block where you had go through a long period of time where you're not having that? Has that happened? And is it due to something happening in your life, do you think?
I have gone through that.
Yeah.
I don't feel like I can trace it to any specific event in my life. It feels like the natural kind of ebb and flow of creative things that happen. I've never really felt worried about it.
Yeah.
I mean, it feels like at some point it might go away and never come back, and that's probably part of life. I try to just like be grateful for it when it's around, and I try to do it the service of like going ahead and writing down the stuff and trying to make the best piece of whatever art that I do out of it as I can when it's there, and when it disappears, to not stress myself out about where it went.
To not try and force it.
Yeah, I don't think that would work anyway. Yeah. I've never really like bothered about it too much, and you know, songwriting wasn't going to be my thing. You know, when I was coming up and I was trying to learn how to play the guitar, what I wanted to do was I wanted to learn how to play like a few guitar players that I had heard when I was a kid from my dad's record collection. That was my goal, is to learn the thing that they did. You know, guitar players like Lightnin' Hopkins or Mance Lipscomb, you know, Robert Johnson, some of these musicians who made one instrument sound like more than one instrument. I wanted to do that, and I wanted to figure that out, and I didn't have any lessons, so it was a time-consuming process, so writing songs never crossed my mind.
Yeah.
Until I was 25 years old and my dad passed away, then suddenly I was writing as a response to grieving.
Yeah.
You know, and I wrote and wrote and wrote, but they didn't look like songs, they looked like these weird, long, like, fragments of stories, you know, just memories that I had. And then after I did that for a while, I realized that these things could be distilled into songs. They would work as songs. And I had melodies in my head. And that's when I started writing actual songs.
Do you find that from growing up in Austin, do you find your childhood kind of works their way into songs subconsciously? Or, you know, when you travel back there, are you kind of pulling these places into how you're writing today?
I think I do that. I think I pull my past into the present a lot, but I don't think I do it on purpose. I think, you know, it's just like, it's the setting for a lot of things, you know. I don't know how it's like for anybody else, but my formative years impact me to this day. I'm 55 years old, you know, and I'm still kind of grappling with what that means to the 11-year-old that I feel like.
Yeah.
And don't feel 55. And I get together with friends of mine who are the same age, and I don't, you know, there's usually a gulf between us, because I'm like, I don't feel like I'm 55. I feel like I'm 11. I don't have a retirement account. I don't even have a steady place to live right now. I really don't feel like I'm in my 50s.
Yeah.
But that time period, those venues, you know, the locations, the attitudes of my youth creep into the songs all the time. They crept into the book I just finished writing. You know, the last record is filled with images from those days of growing up. For sure.
Yeah, which I want to talk about Everyday Opus off of your newest album, Last of the Better Days Ahead. There's visuals all over in that, with the unpaved road where he lives on, the house where he's kind of shutting most of the rooms to save on energy. I mean, you have this way of kind of pulling in this spatial imagery into a song. Do you consciously pick up details with places that you see and kind of figure out the human significance of those things then?
Well, I think that those details are what makes life really, really meaningful and important. Without those details, I don't know that, you know, it would be... it's hard... The thing is, my particular journey at this point is really, really concerned with little things. And, you know, I've struggled with clinical depression for most of my adult, well, since I was 13, so almost all of my adult life. And the tactic that it seems to work the best for me to survive this is to concentrate on little things. You know, little things are really important to me. And so I've kind of gone through a process of training myself to see little details all the time, and they do show up in songs. And they do feel like this is the most important part of this song, is this detail. You know, and in Everyday Opus, there's a few of them, you know, the Faygo, the empty cans of Faygo. Yeah. I thought was the part of the song that everything kind of felt like it hinged on, this moment of someone like throwing a empty aluminum can in the garbage can. It just felt like, okay, this is the biggest problem of this person's entire day. You know,
yeah.
It's big enough hinges that this person goes home thinking about that, you know. And I think for my life in real life, I think about that too. I tend to look at details. I tend to, like, I have a process of trying to be grateful every day, and usually it's for little things, because we don't have everyday monumental events to give gratitude about. I have little events every day to give gratitude about, and that's what I do. And now it seems to be the case that those little events oftentimes take precedent over the big events, because they're my daily, you know, they're my daily drivers. So
let's give our listeners a listen to Everyday Opus. Thank you.
streets in this part of town are all made out of dirt, and not any spotlights. When I get up to go to work, the road grader comes once in a while to fill in all the holes and leave a ridge of gravel to trip me as I go. There aren't any sidewalks here, just ditches into yards, and folks get kind of upset when you're walking through their lawn. So I keep it on the roadway and try to move along. If they see me when they're driving, they'll always blow their horn. All up and down this street, these houses all look the same. In the graying of the twilight, I can't recall a single name of any of my neighbors or the faces of their kids. One of the kinds of cars they drive, but their dogs are tired. Walking in these shoes isn't as easy as you'd like. Dodging all these bricks that are baking all my lights. We all have to struggle and hold it as our truth. It's about as special for me as it is for you. I'm on the highway overpass, waiting for the bus to take me to my job in a downtown office, cleaning up the scraps of paper nonsense that the office workers throw in the waste bins full of chewed gum and empty cans of Faygo. But I don't know who they are or even how they look. I only know the jokes they have pinned up in their nook. This one likes football, that one has a pup. Here's one who's real messy, never picks it up. I clean it up before they arrive and head out to my bus, or maybe I'll stay downtown and get a little lunch at the diner near my job if I have some extra cash. But maybe I'm too tired today, so I'll go home to crash. Walking in these shoes isn't as easy as you'd like. Dodging all the bricks that are breaking all my lights. We all have to struggle and hold it as our truth. It's about as special for me as it is for you. All the doors shut to the other rooms in my house that I don't want to heat. No one lives here now but me, and I don't take up very much space, just the front room with my bed and a kitchen and a bath. I'll make a little supper and watch a little TV. I usually feel too restless to find a book and read, so I eat too many chips and I drink too many beers, and the evening drains away and I fall asleep in my chair. Sometime on a weekend, I think I'll visit a friend and remember all our old times and see how they have been. And it feels like a lot of effort to explain myself again, so I'll just wait and see if they'll visit me instead. Walking in these shoes isn't as easy as you'd like. Dodging all these bricks that are breaking all my lights. We all have to struggle and hold it as our truth. It's about as special for me as it is for you. I woke up the next morning before my alarm could go off. I was fuzzy from the beer and too tired to get up. I tried calling into my boss, but she wouldn't answer her phone. I can't afford to lose this job, so I put some coffee on. I pulled on the same clothes I had on the night before. No one ever saw me anyway. It never mattered what I wore. So I locked the door behind me and I started on my walk along my gravel street and downtown to my work.
Listening to Smouse in the House, presented by Adventures in Americana. I'm sitting here with Charlie Parr at the Turf Club here in St. Paul, talking about some songwriting. Well, I wanted to actually, Charlie, expand upon something that I heard you say in another piece. You said about writing, you start with what you know because that's what you have, and then you write towards what you don't know because that's what makes it interesting. You've released a lot of music since 1922, back in 2002. What are you still feeling like you're trying to learn and write towards at this point of your life?
I don't. That's
something.
Whatever it is the answer to that question. But I mean, the important thing about that question is I don't really feel like things are the same. That, you know, the stuff that I was writing about in around 2000. My dad passed away in 95. I spent the next 8 or 10 years writing songs about how, you know, he and I were close, yeah. You know, and the first few records that I wrote of music had something to do with him, and several songs on the new record have something to do with him, you know, and it's different. My grief about my dad is different now than it was before. He would have been 100 years old now, you know. And he would obviously not have been alive. You know, I would still not have him here with me. My grief has never been static, you know? Mm. And life in general has never been static. It's always gone through all the, you know, the little changes. So there's always something to pick apart and write about because it's different every day. You know, I wake up in the morning and I'm maybe in the same place, maybe not. Sometimes I'm not, and there's always something though to catch my attention, especially if you're paying attention to those little things. Like I said, there's going to be something there to be the spark,
yeah,
that leads you to the unknown part. Mm.
I wanted to talk a little bit about 1817 Oakland Avenue, which oddly doesn't contain anything location specific in the song, as the title suggests, though. But and I googled the closest 817 Oakland Avenue is in Sheboygan, Wisconsin, from here. So, how did this song get an address for a title?
There is no address in Austin, Minnesota, of 817 on Oakland Avenue.
Yeah,
there's two places on Oakland Avenue that kind of, when I was a kid, when I was learning music. The music store, there's two of them,
okay,
a block apart. One was Apold's Music and one was Stigney's Music. And those were the places that you would go. Apold's especially, I mean, they, the family-run business, well, so was Stigney's, but, you know, Apold's was in this little house. And it was set up like a house. I remember, like, going in there, and it felt like a house. It felt like you were in their house, and you got to sit down and play music. And Bill, the owner, he would bring guitars and have you play stuff, and was interested in all of the kids at the time. I mean, Austin, for whatever reason, like a lot of young musicians super interested in music. We all went there. We all hung out there. It mm-hmm. felt like a comfortable, supportive environment. Yeah. And walk in the door and they would say, you know, who you were and you know, welcome to this, you know, this place, and here we are. And, you know, it was a really, really comforting and supportive place to try to learn music. Mm-hmm. Later, when I was a teenager, you know, a friend of mine had a house up Oakland Avenue a little ways. I don't remember the house number. And we all gathered there, and it was another one of those kinds of, you know, that friend group that you had when you were 16, you know.
Yeah.
Closer than your family, you know, just really, really tight-knit group of friends that I had. And I remember how supportive we all, friendly, you know, kind atmosphere those places were. When I wrote the song, I didn't know what I was writing about, and it occurred to me, because the title wasn't attached to the song for a long time, and then I didn't even bother to Google the actual addresses. I just, 817 is a good number. It just, you know, it's a fine number. It was only, like, after the record came out, one of my friends from Austin, he texted me, he said, there's no such address. I'm like, so? That's better, right? It's better that there's not an address that correlates to the song, because the song isn't about a specific place, it's about a specific atmosphere.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, hopefully whoever lives at 817 Oakland in Sheboygan isn't getting postcards and letters and stuff. Who knows?
Oh my God.
Well, I want to give our listeners a chance and a listen to 817 Oakland Avenue here.
Like when all the world's filled with light, now do you have that in your sight? Spread it around, do spread it around, do spread it around, do. Have you felt joy in your days? Even though you've had your share of pain, what does hoarding all that joy gain? Spread it around, do. Spread it around, do. Spread it around, do. Has your belly ever been full? And have you fed your family too? Does your table have just a little more room? Spread it around, do. Spread it around, do. Spread it around, do. Are your blankets soft and warm? Does the roof above you keep out the storm? Can you save someone else from being cold? Spread it around. Spread it around, do. Spread it around, do. About love, it'll die if it's covered up. It's gotta be all given away so we can all feel the heat of its rays. night, when all the world's filled with light. Now do you have that in your sight? Spread it around, do. Spread it all around, do. Spread it around, do. Spread it around, do. Spread it around.
You're listening to Smouse in the House, presented by Adventures in Americana. I'm back here with Charlie Parr. Charlie, I want to talk about instruments, because recently you became the caretaker for Spider John's misspelled, stolen multiple times, Gretsch guitar.
Yeah.
As a musician, can you share what that bond is like that happens with instruments over the years, and why this piece it means a lot to you?
Well, the short answer is no. I don't think I know what the answer is to that question. I mean, I've had a lot of guitars. There's been a few guitars that show up in my life that I bond with immediately, and I still have them, and I wouldn't sell them. There are three instruments in my house right now that I just would not part with. Now there's four. John's guitar, I don't consider to be mine. I consider it to be John's guitar, and I am its current caretaker. What I want to have happen with this guitar is, when I'm unable to play it, I want to find a young person who appreciates John Koerner's music, and I want to pass it on to that person. So I'm taking as good a care of it as I can, looking ahead to that. But I don't know what the bond is. I mean, I've felt it all my life. I mean, my first few guitars were pretty not great instruments, but the painful process of trying to get this thing done, you know, get these sounds to happen, mm-hmm. bonded me with this thing. And it's really hard to describe, because at the end of the day, well, it's a thing, it's a tool, you know, and that's a lesson I learned from John. You know, this 12 string that he passed on to me is heavily modified. Yeah. Heavily modified. It's not a 12 string at all, it's a 6 string that's been converted. You know, it's not a precious, sacred artifact. It becomes one because of the legacy of John, of Spider John. And I think he'd be embarrassed if he heard me say that, but I think it's true. You know, look at the people you love, and you wonder where, you know, their instruments are, because it's not. You know, I went to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame when they had Lead Belly's guitar. It's moved from there to Washington, D.C. now, which is probably a better place for it. But I went just to see it, just to sit, you know. And it's not, you know, it's just a guitar. But then it's also really not, you know. And I'm like, just like sitting on the floor in front of it for I don't know how long, just wishing I could touch it. I wish that I could, you know, play the strings that Lead Belly played, you know. Looking at all the other guitars in there too, you know, you get this, certain guitars give off this like intense aura. Mm-hmm. You know, that guitar, Reverend Gary Davis's guitar, Jerry Garcia's guitar, you know, they give off this presence. That guitar that John gave to me gives off this aura, this heavy, like this is about Spider John Koerner, you know.
Yeah.
And I mean, to say it's an honor to have it doesn't even begin to really say what it means to have it. But on the other hand, you know, my main guitar is a guitar that's made by Mule Resonator Company in Michigan, and that guitar has taken on that aura for me.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think anybody's going to care about it in years to come, but that guitar is so important to me now because of what we've been through together, that I wouldn't either part with it, you know, and I'm concerned about it. Where is it? You know, someday when I can't play anymore, if it's as important as that guitar that John gave me was, I'll give it away, but I would never sell it. It's worth no money at all to buy it.
Do you write on certain instruments then? Like, do you have, you mentioned you have three guitars at home. Is there one of those that you do the primary when you're hashing out ideas and writing on, or do you just kind of pick up whatever's around you?
I just, whatever's handy, I grab.
Yeah.
I mean, the guitars that I have at home, they're all like, you know, kind of, they each do kind of different things, but, you know, at the end of the day, they're all guitars, so they all can be, you know, done.
Messed with, yeah.
Yeah, and I use a lot of different tunings and stuff, and they all have, you know, the capacity for going where I want them to go. So I grab whatever's handy. If I'm not near an instrument, you know, humming poorly into my phone to try to remember what it is that I wanted to remember.
The voice memo app, I think, is the most used app on phones, because I hear that it gets used for all these ideas, and it just... It's all over the handy. Place, and it's free.
Yeah, it's handy, it's free.
Yeah.
I released a digital-only record during the pandemic of instrumental voice app fragments.
Yeah.
But some people really said they really like it. I mean, yeah. It's weird and deranged sounding, but I just got into it so much that I took like a 45 minutes worth of this stuff and put it out.
Yeah.
You know.
Hopefully it inspires others to write from that and to maybe pull ideas of their own.
Yeah, maybe.
You have to spread it around, right? Yeah. Well, thanks, Charlie, for your time today and for having us here at the Turf Club. We're excited to have you here all month.
Me too.
It does feel like a second home for us to have you here with us. So
it's been years, 5 years now since I've been doing this, and I look forward to it every year. This is one of my highlights, really, of my year. This is one of my favorite venues. It was one of my favorite venues before I ever played here. I saw so many shows here in the 80s and 90s.
Well, the first time that you took the stage here, then what's that feeling like?
The first time you see all these shows,
and then you're finally the one sitting up there.
I did these Sundays. Hazy Dave would do these Sundays on the side stage, but then that was still there.
Yeah.
And it's these folky Sundays, and it was just... Oh my! It was just amazing, just to be in here and be, you know, my guitar playing is suddenly what's coming through the speakers. It was a big deal to me. It still is a big deal. It doesn't feel like a big deal. It feels like a big deal to be here. I love it here.
The Turf and Minneapolis and St. Paul are lucky to have you. Yeah. So
thanks.
Take care, and we'll catch you around.
Thanks. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Thanks, Charlie. Yeah. To see exclusive photos of our guests taken at the interviews, plus articles, videos, an event calendar, and more, visit AdventuresInAmericana.com. For concert coverage and ticket giveaways, follow Adventures in Americana on Instagram and Facebook.
This has been an episode of Smouse in the House, brought to you by Adventures in Americana. I'm Jacqueline Knott, co-producer along with Carol Roth, and your host, Tom Smouse. Join us next time as we visit with Minnesota folk singer-songwriter Sarah Morris. Thanks for listening.